If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into the show. I don't want to waste any time because we have a guest back by popular demand. Neil Bawa is back on the show today, and I'm super excited to talk about the state of the market. I mean, that's the thing that's on everyone's mind right now, under lockdown, under quarantine. Where is this virus right now? How is it affecting the real estate investors around the world? And it's great to have Neil back on the show. Welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me again, Clayton. Glad to be back.
Well, it's great to have you. And I should mention, of course, Neil is the... He's the founder of MultifamilyU.com, and you just held a webinar last night. You do webinars on a regular basis. Tell us about the webinar you held last night in the middle of this lockdown, and how did it go?
Yeah, we were very concerned that investors had simply lost the will to invest because they were so frustrated, and it turned out that we were completely wrong. We had the largest investor audience in our history. We had 336 investors that showed up. At the 90-minute mark, when we were answering questions, we still had 300 of them. And we do a poll basically we gather money using the poll that comes up at the 45-minute mark. And we had about $18 million that were verbally mentioned. I think that about $9 million of that will come in. And that was a very, very good result. And surprisingly, it was very comparable to the raises that we did in December and January. There didn't seem to be a change. And maybe that is because the stock market did go up last week and made people feel a little wealthier or better. But we were concerned that we would have trouble raising $3 million. And so we hit $9 million. So from an investor mindset perspective, that was a surprising but positive piece of news.
That's great news. Good for you. Tell us about the project. So, of course, Neil, for those of you who don't know, if he's been a big guest here on our show multiple times, and of course you've asked him to come back, and we'd love to have him here on the show. Multifamily is his crown. I do single families and duplexes, and so we come from both of those worlds. But tell us about this multifamily project and the $3 million that you raised for it.
So here's what I've been feeling for the last year or two. As you know, I do the large multifamilies. I either buy like 200 unit value add or I build 200 unit value add. And both of those are expensive, right? A 200 unit value add is $20 million, a 200 unit new construction is $50 million. I just felt like there was something wrong with the market in that you know, December, Jan timeframe. And obviously, I didn't think of coronavirus, but I was like, this is not going to hold up. And so I wanted to change the methodology and kind of go closer to what you're doing, Clayton. I mean, you guys do single families. That's not my thing. But what I decided to do is that I'm going to productize my multifamily. And I'm going to productize it by creating clusters of quadplexes. Why quadplexes? Because quadplexes can be sold to individual investors, whereas my multifamilies can typically not be sold to individual investors. When I do a $20 million multifamily project, I have to sell it to a big dude. And so the number of buyers for those are limited, whereas a quadplex can actually be sold to a well-off individual investor offering me different exits. And so this project is our first, we call it Grow Capitus 2.0 project. So our name of our investment company is Grow Capitus. And the reason that's the case is because this is a syndication project, because we're basically building clusters of these quadplexes. But then we've given ourselves a lot of options that I didn't have ever in multifamily. I have the option to build them all in 1 year, which you can do with large multifamily. It takes 2 years to build. So these are bricks and sticks. You know, I'm not pouring concrete. There's no elevators. So now I can build them in a year. So that's my first exit benefit. And secondly, I have the option of selling 3 out of 8 in this first set and basically being debt-free for the rest and holding them for 5 years. That I didn't have as an option, multifamily. Basically, I couldn't sell a portion of my 200 unit. And then the third option is sell all of them, all 8 of them in a year and make a huge amount of money. That's an option. We've got an option to basically refinance and hold them. But from an exit perspective, the biggest differentiation was that we now have the option of selling, you know, any percentage of these 8 quadplexes to investors. And that gives us a huge numbers of options, given how the economy does, because we really don't know how things are going to go over the next 6 months. So that's what was different. And I think the reason the investors were so excited about it was they saw that I was building more resilience into the projects compared to previous projects, right? So those were definitely less resilient than this one was. So what was beautiful was before, investors investing into our syndication could never buy a portion of our deal. How do you buy a portion of a 200 unit, you know, multifamily? You can simply invest in it as a syndication investor and you can exit as a syndication investor. But in this project, people could actually invest into the syndication, and a year later when the quadplexes are built, they can buy them, right? So they can have their cake and eat it too.
Right.
They can actually get into a quadplex without ever doing a construction loan that's a recourse loan. So that was a very beautiful thing to do, because I'm not on a construction loan either, because my lender, when I'm building 8 quadplexes, is not asking me to do a recourse loan.
That's great. That's brilliant. Those multiple exit strategies. So you and I are in similar territory there. Yeah. I mean, we've been very busy. I was surprised, you know, I was sort of holding my breath. How were we going to be during this period? And, you know, we've been hearing from a lot of investors who want that second, third duplex. They're adding to their portfolio, or now they're in a situation where with the CARES Act, they have an ability to take that additional money from their retirement account. If they, instead of $50,000, they're able to use $100,000 in a self-directed account. So there's some extra movement here for real estate investors, which has been encouraging. We just had four closings this morning, actually, on 4 different duplexes. So we've been very busy. I'm curious, we were kind of comparing notes before we started the show. One of our concerns internally was we were still able to build because we're seen as essential, but would supply dry up? Would we not be able to get access to timber and these other things? How has that affected you? We haven't seen it yet. What about you?
We haven't seen it yet either. And again, we've been a little surprised by it. So we have a speculation here that one of the benefits that the world has had is that China went into their cycle and then they came out of lockdown as the rest of the world was going into lockdown. And that actually helped, because China is kind of the manufacturing driver. And in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we've heard that 75% to 80% of their manufacturing capacity is up and running again. So just as the world was beginning to run dry, a lot of their capacity has started to ramp up. So we haven't seen much in terms of disruptions. Now, we do expect some disruptions, but we haven't seen much. Also, you know, for new construction, timber does not come from China. Timber comes from Canada. And for the most part, the Canadians have considered timber to be essential. And so that portion of their economy is continuing to run. I do expect that some of that, you know, them bringing timber into the U.S. on these trucks is going to get disrupted at some point. So we're going to see sporadic, issues with the supply chain, but I don't think we're going to see wholesale issues.
Right. All of our big header beams and everything else coming out of British Columbia. So that's fortunate in that regard. Let's just talk about the broader economy right now. So we're about a month now into this lockdown. We just passed Easter, of course, last weekend. Mm-hmm. So where do you see things going? We've been seeing, obviously, a lot of concern right now in the mortgage industry. How will that spill over into investors? Because I got to say, when you ever watch like CNBC or Fox Business or any of these other, you know, stations, it's all geared towards the retail market. That's what they're talking about when they're talking about housing. They're not talking about you and me as investors. So what can investors expect away from the CNBC audience?
Yeah, so here's what you should know. There's a big difference between the single family market today and the commercial market. The single family market is actually continuing to be very liquid. Now, you might see some price declines at the higher end of the single family market. We're certainly seeing that in the San Francisco area. But the investor grade single unit that's available for rental or duplex, that market seems to be fairly liquid. And I've been surprised by it. And now you will see J.P. Morgan just raised the requirements to qualify for a single family. And you're going to see a number of other lenders follow suit as they're a little bit afraid. So what will happen is that if you are a well-qualified lender and you're a well-qualified investor, you've got the money, you've got the credit score, I think it will not only allow you to continue buying homes, but in certain areas of the U.S., you might actually see a 5%, maybe 10% decline. Other areas, I don't think that you see a decline, and here's why. So the commercial markets are mostly frozen up. That's the world that I live in, right? So the commercial markets are mostly frozen up at this point. That's why I'm going after that quadplex product, because I know that that's very liquid, right? A quad, for the purposes of lending, is a single family home, whereas a fiveplex is a multifamily. So that's where I'm going, because I'm seeing more liquidity there in the next year. So the commercial market, whether it is large multifamily or large retail or large hotels, it's all frozen. So guess what happens when there's a freeze? Lenders still need to lend because that's how they make money. So I think some of that lending is actually going to start flowing into the single family and duplex market over the next 3 to 6 months. And we'll see that the single family market is going to be more liquid, and that will prevent the prices from going down too much. You're going to see a decline in multifamily prices. You're going to see a decline, a huge decline in strip malls and hotels. And you might see a decline in single family, but I think it is going to be shorter, and it's going to be a smaller decline because of the liquidity benefits. Also, in the commercial market, we haven't seen any benefit at all from the treasury reductions, from the interest rate reductions, because that market is fearful. And when it's fearful, it wants a bigger spread, right? So actually, prices have gone up there. Interest rates have gone up. In the single family market, you are seeing a significant benefit of the lower interest rates, even though for a while the interest rates went back up because there was a lot of fear in that market too, but they now seem to have come down and settled. So given that interest rates are low and given that there's liquidity in that marketplace, there's going to be both stock investors and commercial investors that are going to flow into single family. And that's where we see the market going. Now, if you're not well capitalized, if your credit score is not high, I do think that you get hit on the single family side because they're going to tighten lending.
Yeah. Do you think right now we're about 680 is our sort of sweet spot, 680 and above for our clients. We're able to get a fantastic rates on our properties that we sell. Mm-hmm. They're able to roll in and do cost segregation that we build right into it. So they're able to do a lot of things right at the outset. So they're really almost can pick up a property with the tax benefits for virtually nothing. You know, they're sort of getting their down payment back. When you go, yep. I think they're going to adjust that beyond the 680. Is that where we're going to start?
It's going to 700 is a new 680. So So basically, it's going to go up 20 basis points. You're going to see, them giving you better rates at the 700 level. Mm-hmm. So JP Morgan already adjusted to that, and I think Wells Fargo will within the next few weeks. Okay. So you're going to see that, and it's just speculation on my part on how long it stays up before it goes back to that 680 sweet spot. I'd say 3 to 6 months, and really depends on how we do with the phase that I call the dance. So the United States is in the last 30 days of the phase called the hammer, and we've been very successful at the hammer at this point in time. We're actually ahead of schedule. All of the studies that I saw 30 days ago about where we would need to be, we're ahead of those. Every day our curve is bending, and it's bending very consistently. We're seeing other, places bending, Spain, Italy, Iran, UK, they're all bending at pretty much the same rate as ours. So the hammer phase seems to have been quite successful and works just like the doctor said it would. So right around May 15th, May 20th, the U.S. will go into what is known as the dance. And the dance is where you didn't, wait long enough for the virus to die. So there's going to be hot spots, and you're going to have to basically dance with the virus. You can't do the hammer again. You can't shut down your country again. So you basically have to figure out what to do. You have to remediate it locally, hotspot by hotspot. And I think that when, lending rates go back and we go back to that 680 credit score, when people feel confident that we know how to do the dance without having to shut the country down again.
Right. Great points. All right, let's talk about some of the different markets that you're looking at right now. Obviously, we do a lot in West Texas. Last time we talked, you were talking about different spots in Atlanta, Indiana. What has you excited right now? What parts of the country do you think are, I don't want to say recession-proof, but in many ways, recession-resistant right now?
So I think our playbook has changed, right? So normally we look at, population growth, income growth, job growth, home price growth, and crime reduction. That's kind of our five, metric set. And for those of you that want a two-hour course on how we use these metrics, go to multifamilyu.com, click on the learn button. you'll see a course there called Location Magic. And this is a 2-hour video-driven course where I'm teaching you how to apply these 5 metrics to every city and every neighborhood in the United States so you can figure out what are the best cities and neighborhoods in the U.S. That still matters, right? Because fundamentally, you want to go to good places. Like Texas, the biggest reason we like investing in Texas is that there's this continuous movement of Fortune 500s to Texas. And that basically protects the Texas economy from all kinds of shocks, right? And it is going through a shock right now because of the oil crisis. But bottom line is that there's so much Fortune 500 flow to Texas that in the long run, it protects Texas. And that's why we really like it as an investment thesis. Now, to go back to your question, though, things have changed. Now, what has changed? So what are the sort of places that we feel are corona resistant, right? Or their investment opportunities in a post-corona world? So number one, in a post-corona world, you wouldn't want to invest in places that were extremely dependent on tourism or retail. So that takes out Las Vegas, that takes out Orlando, that takes out Miami. Because with a, you know, economy comes back, tourism doesn't bounce back immediately. And also a lot of damage has been done by shutting down these tens of thousands of tourism-related companies. Many of those won't come back. And so the economies of those places will be affected. So you don't want to go to those places. You also don't want to go to places that have a very high impact from the oil bust, right? So there's parts of Pennsylvania, there's parts of Ohio, there's parts of Texas where there's an enormous impact from the oil bust. So you got to be careful there. The oil bust is going to be shorter in my mind than the tourism bust. We saw tourism come back 3 or 4 years after the 2009 recession, where oil sort of bounced back within 18 months, 12 to 18 months. So
once people are able to drive again, we'll actually need oil again, right?
We'll need oil again. So that bounce back for oil, the oil economy tends to be quite a bit quicker, right? So in the end, the question is, you know, for oil to bounce back, we need tourism to partially bounce back because we use a massive amount of oil for jetliners worldwide. Right now, we're not using any. So we have this glut of oil that you know, it's going to take a year. So if your investment thesis is 5 years, you can avoid this comment, right? And you can actually get a little bit of a discount today in areas that are near oil because there's people that are worried about that oil shortage. But bottom line is that in the short run, you're going to see oil areas affected. You're going to see those areas affected. Here's the third part. Today, I think it makes more sense to invest in Republican states that rather than in Democrat states. And I'll tell you why. I'm a Democrat myself. I live in California. But I invest in Republican states, and that has become much stronger because of the coronavirus. We're already seeing that the country is splitting in two when it comes to its plans for the dance phase, right? So the Western states, California, Oregon, and Washington have made a pact. Look, you know, we're going to keep going. We're going to stay in lockdown until we are absolutely positively sure that this is not going to kill people. New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey have formed a similar sort of pact, right? So the Democrat states are saying, we are not going to take this risk that our people could die and we don't care about the economy. And then you've got Republican states like Texas and Georgia and Florida that are saying, no, we're going to dance. We realize that our economy, if we shut it down, there's a life value to that. When you shut down the economy for a month, you lose tens of thousands of lives for people that become jobless, for people that end up on the streets, for people that die of hunger. And we understand that. So what we are going to do is we're going to reopen our economy in spurts and deal with the fact that there will be local hotspots and local shutdowns that we're going to have to deal with. So if this thing takes 18 months to go away, I think that a lot of investment will move away from these expensive coastal Democrat states towards the less expensive, more business-friendly Republican states. So Texas, Georgia, Florida are definitely good options to look at. Arizona, you know, I would have said Nevada, but I think Las Vegas is going to be hit very hard.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And one of the questions we get in the office, because we do a lot of work in West Texas, is oil. And, you know, that's not really an oil area for us at all. We have the universities, healthcare. Yeah. We have a lot of healthcare tenants in our properties as well. So that brings me to my next question. Actually, I want to ask you about Tennessee as well, because that's another area that I like. In parts of North Carolina. I just did a video a few weeks ago that we published here, Red States versus Blue States. And it was spot on with exactly what you just said, that the policies there, we saw this in Oregon, we saw in Portland even before Corona, rent controls. And so you're seeing a lot of different things that make a lot of these states not landlord friendly for investors like you and me, right?
And it's getting worse. Have you heard that a number of the Democrat states are considering an actual rent forgiveness plan, an enforced rent forgiveness plan? San Jose, you know, the city of San Jose in California is considering actually passing, preventing landlords from collecting money, which I think is illegal and will get challenged in the courts. But in the short run, you'll have a rent strike movement that will race across the United States. But I can bet you the red states are simply going to say, psh, this is not going to be allowed here.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in Texas, I mean, you can get an eviction very quickly. And that's not to say we're cold-hearted landlords in any way. It's just that work with your tenants in this situation. And, you know, if there is a time when you can't make that payment, great, we'll work with you. And then let's try to make it up 2 months from now when you're off of your furlough and you're back to work. And so you work with your tenants. So let's talk about the tenant angle here. How are you handling that from a multifamily perspective? Are any of your investors concerned about that? And what are you seeing from your tenants right now?
So our investors are concerned, and the way that we've handled it is with continuous messaging to our investors. So normally we connect with our investors once a month with an email, you know, that we send out to them. So firstly, we're doing videos where we are basically explaining to them exactly what we are doing. So to, you know, to meet our investors' concerns, first, we increased our communication level. Second, we told them everything that's happening at the properties. And third, we're not waiting until the 25th of the month to tell them what our collections look like at every property. So we're communicating with them. And our properties have been a mixed bag. I mean, our property in Dalton, Georgia, you know, delinquency has only been about 3 or 4% above normal. Then we have properties in parts of Atlanta where the delinquency has been 20% above normal. So we've got, you know, anywhere from 3% to 20% above normal in terms of delinquencies. And we're dealing with that basically one tenant at a time, exactly the way that you said it, which is let's first verify that the tenants have been laid off. And if they are, we give them lots of options. Number one, you can use a portion of your deposit. So you can use a portion of your deposit to pay your April rent and a portion of your deposit to pay May rent. So that way you end up paying half of your rent and the other half comes from the deposit. We'll give you the option to forego rent for the month of April, but it's not going to go away. It's going to get added on to the future months of your lease. So essentially you're modifying your lease. We're going to give you the options to make 2 payments or 3 payments if you want to wait for that money that's coming in from the government. So there's a lot of different pieces that we are working on with individual tenants. Obviously, we have to be careful to stay in compliance with the Fair Housing Act. But I think that the Fair Housing Act was really designed to help tenants. And since we're helping tenants, I think that's less of a concern right now. So messaging our tenants is also a huge thing. We're letting them know rent is due. We want to help you. We need to help you. But to maintain the stability of this apartment complex, this community, we still have to pay our mortgage, which means rent is due. Let's sit down and talk about how to accomplish that.
Right. And the deposit checks have just gone out, or direct deposit checks from the first round of stimulus checks, I think hit a lot of people's bank accounts. I've been hearing from comments from our viewers that happened overnight. The paper checks could take longer. The IRS has made it available on Wednesday, the 17th of April, for you to go to their website and you can put in your direct deposit information. If you hadn't had it already on file with the federal government, you can go to their website and you can do that. So they're trying to do everything electronically and speed up that process to get money. And I'm sure we'll see another.
Yeah, that's our message to our tenants, saying, look, if you didn't use ACH debit to get your money back from the government, you need to do that now, because there are some people that they're saying the checks may not come in until September. Mm-hmm. And so it makes all the sense in the world to go and put this information in so you get that money now when you need it. I don't think you're going to need that money in September because you'll have your job back.
Right. Right. Exactly. So we hope. You mentioned Orlando. I mean, 40,000, 43,000 furloughed from Disney. Hopefully those people will go back to work in a few months once all this settles down. So things will look a lot different. I'd love to have you back on a regular basis, Neil. It's always great to have you here. Have you back on in a few months.
Absolutely.
Once we get through this craziness and kind of see how the market is unfolding then.
Yeah, I'd love to do a 60, 90 day kind of brain dump on where does that market look now? Because right now, the way I see it, Clayton, is we're in a fog. And if you shine a bright headlight on a fog, all you're going to do is blind yourself.
Right.
But I think that the fog is going to thin or it's going to lift within the next 60 days. I think the biggest, most powerful thing that I've seen that tells me that we're gonna do the dance well is the Google and Apple collaboration to build an app that is part of their operating systems. It's not a separate app. It's a part of their OS, which allows contact tracing to be done in a very seamless fashion. You just need to tap on it once, and now it's going to do contact tracing. And so if you get sick and you go off to a medical professional, that medical professional is going to basically use your phone to find everyone that has been near you or in touch with you, even when you went off to a grocery. That's a very powerful application. And the fact that Google and Apple are building it together instead of being their usual kind of, you know, competitors, right, tells me that that app will release by June 1st or before. And all you have to do is flip on the location, you know, in your phone. And now we can do contact tracing in an effortless way. That will make an enormous difference to the dance phase.
That's powerful. And the fact that Apple's involved with it makes me happier because of the privacy side of it. We know how they are with privacy on things. So to have those two coming together with this is fantastic. And it reminds me of the movie Contagion, which my wife and I just made the mistake of watching the other night. And
I know.
I don't know why we watched
it.
But
yeah, it's not fun right now.
I know. It's weird, but it's eerie how spot on it is. But of course, they're working in reverse, trying to trace back to patient one throughout the movie. And if they had this Google-Apple collaboration, it'd be probably much easier for them to track instead of having to use hidden camera footage in casinos or whatever. So anyway, Neil, I want to make mention of your website again. Everyone should go check this out. It's multifamilyu, just the letter U, multifamilyu.com. We'll have it linked up in the show notes and the bottom where people can connect. Neil, it's always great having you here on the show. My mother-in-law, who listens to the show regularly, said, "Wow, Neil, that was fantastic. You got to get him back on the show." Well, here you go. Here you go, Wanda. He's back.
Thank you, mother-in-law.
Great having you. Great having you, Neil. Great seeing you again.
Great to see you again, Clayton. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for subscribing. We really appreciate all of the feedback. Leave any questions you have here below. We'll ask them when Neil is on the show next time. We just want you to go out there and take action. Don't have fear right now. You heard how both Neil's business, my business, both dealing with this situation right now, and just take it day by day, tenant by tenant, and we come out on the other side of this thing stronger and better for it. So we'll see you next time, everyone.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.